Hi, everyone. New supply chain regulations are here, and we're going to show you what to make of them. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. The EU's new Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive regulation will massively impact how organizations will manage their supply chains going forward. And the Ethicast is running a special four-part series to give you what you need to know, not just to comply with this new regulation, but to use it as a blueprint for advancing your supply chain program to even higher levels of success. We have a terrific panel assembled for this discussion, featuring Patrick Nates, CEO of Vector International, a business consultancy around responsible business with a special focus on ESG, headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. Patrick is joined by Rob Bales, Director of Sustainable Supply Chains at Control Risks, a global specialty risk consultancy headquartered in London, England. And they are hosted by Ethisphere's own Executive Vice President and resident supply chain expert, Craig Moss. And now, without further delay, here's Craig, Rob, and Patrick.
Hi, welcome back. My name's Craig, and I'm here with Patrick and Rob. And today we're going to do the third part in our series on supply chain due diligence. And what we're going to look at today are the internal changes that need to take place in your organization, one, to meet the regulations, but really to develop an effective program. If you look at the OECD guidelines on due diligence, they really talk about the need for this holistic program that looks at not only environment, but it also looks at social and human rights issues. And it goes far beyond the idea of just due diligence and background checks. It gets into the whole idea, we talked about this in session number two, of being able to understand the impact, to understand the risk, to be able to monitor what's going on in the supply chain, or as what we called it, the constellation of value that you're dealing with. And then to be able to report on that. So that takes data. A lot of it is going to be data. What kind of data do you have to be able to do that? But the other thing that's really going to change is the internal relationships inside your organization. No longer is it going to be that you have a sustainability person, and even that you might have an environmental person separate from a social person, but you're also now going to need to get more involved with your compliance team, with your legal team. And of course, it's the supply chain people that own the relationships with the third parties. So you're going to have to be able to form this kind of internal cross-functional team to be able to take the right steps, to be able to put the right programs in place, the policies, the procedures, do the risk assessment. You're going to have to broaden your lens, so to speak, and form this kind of cross-functional team internally. I'm going to go to Patrick first. Patrick, you've been at this for a long time, and you've really worked with a lot of multinational companies, helping them build their programs. What's going to happen now with these new types of requirements, and how are companies going to deal with the difference between environmental requirements and social and human rights and requirements?
There's been an interesting shift over the last couple of years. I mean, if we think back, we had environmental teams that were looking at environmental management as such, probably more of their own operations than of the supply chain. And we had social compliance people that would reside in ESG or sustainability teams that were kind of the compliance function. They were not really compliance, but they looked at, does the supplier meet certain criteria? And as these laws and as the OECD guidance is, you know, becoming more familiar to a lot of organizations, we begin to see the shift. And we begin to see that multiple, you know, stakeholders are talking to each other within an organization. We've got procurement, which is a central function to manage the suppliers. We've got legal that is now involved because clearly there is regulatory compliance requirements. And we still have the ESG, environment, social, sustainability people, you know, there as well. But the shift is quite dramatic, where it is now you have to comply and you have to do it in a systemic way. But the question is, comply with what? And how do you comply systemically? And a lot of organizations are now beginning to figure out, okay, well, here's really kind of where procurement takes the lead. here's really kind of where we have the social or the environmental people that take the lead and provide support. And this is really what we need from the legal teams. The challenge that, you know, we are seeing with a lot of organizations is that these three different internal stakeholders are looking at the regulations in very different ways. And somehow they speak quite a different language. It's almost like, you know, they talk about the same thing, but they don't really understand each other. And I think the OECD guidance and, you know, the question for a more holistic systemic approach is forcing that dialogue, looking at, you know, different aspects of the system, talking the same language, looking at data in the same way. And I think that's really healthy. Still, with a lot of organizations, social and environment is not combined very often. They're still very different focus areas. And, you know, again, some of them are looking at, you know, climate change and water usage and scarcity reduction. You know, others are looking at hazardous material, you know, social compliance, you know, the traditional topics, child labor, working hours, etc. So in a lot of organizations, these systems are still quite separate. They do have systemic approaches, but not the same system. And recently, we are beginning to see, pretty much as of this year, some organizations going, hold on a second, isn't there some efficiency to be gained? Because some of what the social people are doing and some of what the environmental people are doing, they're doing the same step on the same audience, the same stakeholders. Isn't there a level of efficiency that we can get in our organization by not necessarily merging the entire system, but at least certain parts of the system? And that happens, you know, more and more also in concert with legal and compliance.
Yeah, you bring up a great point there. And one of the other things that I think, when you look at the dynamic between the different internal departments, companies are going to have to look at performance metrics also, because quite often you'll see the supply chain people have performance metrics that are diametrically opposed to the performance metrics of the social or the environmental people. So I think that's another thing that companies have to be sensitive to as you start to look at how to build a more cohesive management system around this. Rob, at Control Risk, you've worked with a lot of large companies, and typically I think you told us you tend to work with the compliance department. What do you see happening as you reach out to your clients? What's happening there? And are the other departments getting more involved, or what do you see happening?
We're certainly seeing more dialogue now between the sustainability and ESG function and the compliance functions. I would caveat that with that's really restricted to some of the larger clients that we work with. And they're doing exactly that. They're looking for those efficiencies. So what the compliance function is saying is, hey, look, we have an existing third-party risk management process in place. And we're looking at, you know, maybe cybersecurity risks. We're looking at sanctions. We're looking at corruption. And we're doing that at scale across thousands of suppliers. We now need to be looking at ESG and sustainability as well as another risk domain. Now, there are parts of that that we're not geared up to handle, but we can help you deliver some efficiencies with the sustainability team's agenda by weaving that into our existing program. And that's so what we're seeing now is that compliance buyer really just looking at ESG and sustainability as another facet of risk that needs to be included within that existing process and system. There is a risk, of course, with that is that you're not doing that across the full life cycle of what is required, because those regulatory requirements for supply chain due diligence are much more complex than they are for other types of risk. But of course, it matters less if you have a very strong sustainability function, which is still doing the kind of the heavy lifting work that ultimately has to be done. So we're definitely seeing with the maturer businesses that, you know, starting to engage across the functions. But I would say that that's not necessarily always the case. And there's definitely a group of companies that are going to start being hit by these regulatory requirements, but that to date haven't, but that also may not have had the sufficient level of, you know, pressure or scrutiny on the business. It's required them to put sustainability programs in place, and they're really going to start from square one. So they may not even have the function, the sustainability function in place to begin with.
Yeah, you brought up a great point. And I do a lot of work with private equity firms and their portfolio companies. So quite often these will either be fast growth companies, quite large. I mean, they're not small companies. They could be at like 500 million or a billion in sales, or sometimes they're carve outs where they'll be carved out from a larger organization. A lot of these companies might have a general counsel. In many cases, they might have like one person that kind of is covering sustainability as a whole. So it's really a challenge. But a lot of them do have relatively good third-party risk management programs on a specific topic that's been important to them. So like they might have a really good data privacy risk management program. So I think one of the things that I always advocate is let's be practical here. And so how do we start to maybe piggyback on what we already do and integrate a couple things related to environment and social into it, instead of saying, you got to build this whole big new system? That gets back to what we talked about in session two, is risk prioritization and really understanding the inherent, and then also getting down with those key suppliers to understand the residual risk that they pose to you, I think is an important piece. My definition of a management system might be a little different than other people's. My definition is trained, committed people routinely following procedures to achieve a certain outcome. So if you break that down, you got trained, committed people, meaning there has to be training, but they also have to be committed. They have to believe that there is a point in doing this. Otherwise, it's a check the box exercise that at best is going to get put in a drawer. Routinely following procedures means it has to be practical for people. If you put together an impractical program, you're going to create a workaround culture. You're not going to create a culture of compliance. People will find ways to do their job and work around the new controls that you put in place. So with that in place, I want to turn it over to two of you to start to think about what are some of the elements of a good supply chain due diligence management system, and how do we start to build those elements out?
If we're going to talk about due diligence and supply chain, I think it really starts with a component that I think we all refer to as responsible supply chain engagement. I think it is really important that, you know, in order for, you know, trained, committed people, you know, to do what they're supposed to do, you need to give them a framework. And, as we talk about supply constellations and making sure that, you know, you are managing the risk of that, you know, that happens through engagement. And so what is responsible engagement? You know, and I think every organization could benefit from defining that, and not only, you know, kind of as a policy statement, but really kind of break it down into kind of what are the different stages in that engagement, and what is the expectation from you in our organization as you engage with suppliers. And while we kind of refer to that, you know, generally responsible supplier engagement, very often people say, oh, well, you know, when we engage, you know, we're good to go. And now, you know, with the supply chain due diligence requirements, we're saying, well, no, you need to do a little bit of homework up front. But in actual fact, I do believe that there is a lot of benefit, and we see that with a lot of organizations, to look at the entire life cycle of a supplier. Mm-hmm. And you start with kind of, you know, the very first step in due diligence, you know, that we talked about, which is kind of what's the risk of the country and the region and the sector that they're in. But then as you go through the supplier identification, I think there's a lot of work that you can do before you even reach out to a supplier to begin with. Then I would say there is supplier due diligence. And again, you know, that's probably even, you know, just right at onboarding or right before or after, depending on the organization and their procurement practices. But you really need to look at kind of what are the business indicators, you know, how good is this organization that we want to do business with? And a lot of people kind of separate ESG risk from the rest of business risk. And I would say, please don't do that, because when you look at how good an organization is on its business performance, that gives you an indication of quality of management. Mm-hmm. And if you have high quality of management, you know that they're going to manage everything in a very similar way, including ESG and risk, right? So good business performance, probably lower ESG risk. Then there's a pre-engagement process, you know, ensuring that you understand each other and you know, what the commercial relationship is going to be like. Then you've got the traditional pre-production due diligence, you know, look at the risks. But again, look at the residual risks, you know, don't immediately run. It is about identifying risks and controls. Then there's the production dialogue. We can talk a lot about, you know, how to manage risk while you're actually in a relationship. You know, Rob already referred to it with monitoring and geopolitical risks, et cetera, supply chain disruptions. How do you handle that? But then responsible exit, a key element, because again, even although you are exiting a supplier, you could still have residual risk, although you are no longer present, right? So having that responsible exit strategy is a key element. I'm sorry if I went a bit long there, but it's such an important component to kind of that supplier risk management.
Rob, when you look at a management system for supply chain due diligence, what are some of the elements that stand out to you?
Yeah, well, I think maybe a useful one here, because it builds on what you were just covering there, Patrick, is really that piece around the full life cycle, and that this isn't just the due diligence. It's also around the supplier improvement over time, otherwise referred to as the corrective actions. Mm-hmm. And I think important there, as a backdrop, to think about the fact that many of the big companies, and this certainly is for the more mature businesses that have sustainability goals and targets, that they are working to drive a quantitative outcome or goal. And, you know, you see those expressed in many different ways by the big multinational companies, you know, whether that's we reduce our emissions by X, by whatever date that is. And that's, you know, where the sort of the compliance and the beyond compliance intersect. I mean, I think absolutely with corrective actions, what you're trying to do is you're trying to drive that supplier improvement performance. You're trying to, and you know, this is also interesting, I think, because it highlights the different functions of the business, how they have to interact mm-hmm. around that management system. You know, a corrective action for a specific type of human rights risk, it's something that has to be developed probably by your sustainability or ESG team, because it's complex subject matter and there's a complex issues. So you have your sustainability team, which really needs to advise on a remediation strategy and or an approach. You've then got your procurement team and really your buyer, because the buyer is the person that holds a relationship with the supplier, who then needs to implement that corrective action. So they need to wrap that up as part of their supplier, you know, business review process, to your point, Patrick, about having to integrate that into your existing systems and processes. And then ultimately, you've got multiple different functions of the business kind of needing to come together to express a view on what is, you know, an acceptable risk threshold against which you're going to decide on a kind of no-go sourcing decision. So there are multiple different facets to that management system, and they all have to draw upon different parts of the business.
Rob, you bring up a couple of critical points there. One is that need for corrective action has to be part of it. But I think from a large brand or retailer standpoint, when you start to look at your overall supply chain, as we talked about in session two, you can't deal with all these companies the same. Some of your companies in your supply chain are going to be transactional companies where you do need to understand the risks they pose. Other companies are going to be more strategic to you. And it's those strategic ones where you need to really think about developing a longer term relationship that incorporates ESG management into the core of your relationship with them. I've done some work in the electronics industry, and some of the very large electronics companies, actually, when they do quarterly business reviews of their suppliers, 10, in some cases as high as 15% of the supplier's evaluation is based on ESG performance. So you don't have to go that far in day one, but the idea is that if you start to integrate ESG performance into overall supplier performance with your key suppliers, it creates a natural relationship where both of you want to help them get better at that. They want a better supplier scorecard. You want them to reduce your risk. So it becomes sort of a win-win situation with those key suppliers that you know or you're going to have a longer-term strategic relationship with. Let's just kind of wrap it up. I'll go to Rob first time and then Patrick second. Anything you want to wrap up when we think about the internal changes that companies need to go through in order to meet these new supply chain due diligence regulations?
So I think just going back to one of the earlier points there, I think is a really useful starting point for this as a business is really to determine what your driver and your value position for this is. You know, are you approaching this because you're reputationally risk-led? Is it because you see the business case? Or is it a compliance-only driven approach? Or is it really the value, the moral or the ethical case? And I think if you can be clear, as far as different functions of a business who all have different objectives can be, being clear on that from the outset of the program and aligned is really going to help you to design that program in the right way.
Patrick, how would you like to close out?
Well, I think we touched on a lot of excellent points, and I'd like to start with how you opened, Craig, and how Rob closed. You opened by saying trained, committed people, and Rob, you know, closed by saying, you know, frequent communication. And I think the key on all of it is about learning and communication. It is about ensuring that not only your own organization, but also people in your suppliers actually do really understand this and know how to apply it. And things, as we've said in session one and session two, they're transactional, they change every day. And we change in order to manage change and the risk that comes with it well, you need to communicate. So I would say in all of that we do, ensure that your people are knowledgeable and know how to do this stuff, and then communicate, and yes, you heard it, communicate.
So for me to wrap up, I wanted to say one thing that was an eye-opener to me recently. I was working with an organization at Ethisphere. You know, we deal with a lot of the legal and compliance teams. And I was in a meeting, and it was the first time that some of the sustainability people had come into a meeting with the legal and compliance department. And based on the new regs, as Patrick mentioned earlier and Rob highlighted, people view these regulations through a different lens. And the legal person looked to the sustainability person and started to ask a series of questions about, are you doing this to meet the reg? Are you doing that to meet the reg? And the answer too often was either no or, well, kind of. And at a certain point, the legal person said, what the hell have you been doing for the last 10 years? And that is what we want you all to avoid, right? Because there is now a new focus on this with people that have a very, very different view of the world and how to interpret things than you might in your job up to this point. There's no right or wrong. We want you all to understand how to work as a cross-functional group. But it is going to take some adjustment for different people and to be able to build a common language. So with that, we're going to wrap up session three. Session four, we're now going to turn our attention to what does this mean for your supplier relationships? Because you don't live in a vacuum. So with that, thank you very much, and we'll see you again soon.
To learn more about how Vectra International can help you improve your organization's ESG performance, enhance your quality assurance processes, and transform your business, please visit VectraInternational.com. That's VECTRA-INTL.com. And to learn more about how control risks can help you advance your ethics, compliance, and governance programs, as well as a host of additional services, please visit ControlRisks.com. And finally, for a host of helpful resources to help you better understand and manage your supply chain due diligence process, please visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.